Welcome to the third and final hour of the program for today anyway. God willing, I'll be back tomorrow. We now joined in the studio by Tim Dunn. Good morning, Tim Dunn of the Boston Herald. How are you?
I'm doing great, Chris. How you doing?
Big news environment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a lot going on lately. You've
been writing a lot.
Oh, yeah. No, I have been. I'm pretty busy.
You've been pretty busy, and I've been busy reading, as I know my listeners have as well. We had Elizabeth Dion on earlier, running for treasurer, talking about this pension story. You broke the story that the letters were out there from SEIU and NAGE, the two unions that represent Massachusetts state workers. And this is on the pension funds, including the teachers, that, but I don't think we've heard from them yet. But you're going to help us out with that, Tim. The governor wants to take that money and use it for all kinds of new business schemes, things like that, right? Tim, explain this to us.
Yeah, so NAGE, National Association of Government Employees, that's another union, and then the SEIU, Local 509, we had got a letter sent anonymously to us that was from them to Governor Healey, them really urging her and really expressing their firm opposition to taking $50 to $100 million from the state's pension fund to fund economic development grants in her so-called Mass Wins Act. So, you know, the issue with that, obviously, is that there's the PRIM board, which is the name of the acronym is escaping me right now, but they're the ones who decide all these where to invest these pensions to get a better return on investment for retirees, grow the money, what it looks like with these economic developments, especially with all the climate stuff that's cooked into the Mass Wins Act, it's just going to be kind of just like, you know, a pocketbook so she can fund, you know, her pet projects or her supporters or her supportive businesses.
Right.
You know, and that's not how it should be used. And that's what the unions are saying. I think the Police Benevolent Association put out a tweet also. And then I think both gubernatorial candidates put out a tweet. I think Dion also is also talking now.
Yes.
So, there's a lot of opposition to it. Of course, Governor Healey's office says, no, it's not going to happen. That's not what silly public.
We've all misunderstanding it.
Yeah. I guess what I'm reading exactly in the legislation that says it will come out of this fund I guess I'm just reading gibberish. So
it is wild how much her administration, and we've seen this from other people too in politics, you can literally see it right in front of you, can read it, and they go, no, that's not what you're seeing.
Right.
Well, that's not what you're reading.
I think what it screams is that it's a politician singularly, and then also I think you see this a lot with Democrats in general. They're not used to getting pushback. They're used to people just accepting it, so they don't know what to do when someone says, "Hey, what are you doing here?" Because I think when she filed this was, I think, even before I came back from Fox, you know, and I'm not saying it would have been just me either. You know, I'm sure a Ted Daniel would have gotten on this, or you, or somebody would have gone on this. But I think she kind of just expects, because Democrats have such an easy way here, no one's going to notice. If they notice, they're not going to, you know, we'll handle it in private, like Nate tried doing, but you know that doesn't always work out that way.
What's fantastic to me about the governor, and we have seen this. Remember, I voted for her. So it's not like it's just some Republican guy saying this. That her ineptness, in other words, she knows these unions are all very sensitive to their pensions. That's what most people get into government work for, is so that they'll have a kiss in the mail, as Howie Carr calls it. So the idea that she didn't read them in on this, get their them to acquiesce, to fall in line, and she just left it out there, is bizarre form of leadership.
Well, it's bizarre also too because she's a smart woman. You know, right. You certainly haven't. Barry hasn't. I haven't. You know, I certainly haven't shied away. She's not stupid.
No,
you know, she's very smart. And I guess what it shows, I guess I've learned more and more in my young professional life, is that you can have someone who's really smart, like a doctor or a lawyer, but they can be the stupidest person in the world sometimes too. You know, just because you went to Harvard doesn't mean that you're not going to make a dumb decision. You know,
I think she went to Harvard to play basketball.
That's pretty.
I don't think we should ever forget that she went there because of her basketball skills.
Yeah.
It's not like she went there because she's a math genius or a science genius or came up with, you know, something better than capitalism. Social compact or capitalism, right? No, she's a basketball player,
right? And that's what she
runs. Reelected the governor.
That's half of what she runs on too. Right. You know, that's what she. You know, it would make me want to throw up my mouth when her and Baker would do the basketball thing. It's just, oh my God, get over it. but it's just crazy because she is smarter than that. I think her and her team clearly, I think, have a hard time, you know, with reading the room, reading the tea leaves here. You know, like, you know, you'd think
maybe they're hostile to democracy.
Maybe.
In other words, I'm the governor. I'm like a queen. You do what I say.
But no kings.
No kings.
Yeah. Only queens.
Only queens.
Especially in Massachusetts.
Yes. All queens across the board.
Exactly. Exactly.
I wonder if that's what it is. In other words, it's my game. I'm playing it. You can go along or I'll crush you.
Well, that's how the Democrat Party kind of runs nationally and locally and statewide and in all different states. You know, it's fall in line or else. Look at how the legislature is voting with the audit.
Right.
You can't tell me that all these Democrats who voted for these so-called, you know, resolutions for the audit that really don't allow the audit believe in it. They want to get funding for their districts. They want to get reelected. They don't want to get slammed by the powers of Mariano and Spilka and Healey. And that's kind of, I think, how Healey runs her game, too. It's, oh, yeah, you dare challenge me? Then fine, better do it in private, and let's not get this out and embarrass me.
And it's also, I think, why so many of them have fallen in line, to include the governor, the senators, with this guy out of Maine, Graham Plattner, who literally had a Nazi tattoo on his body for 18 years and did all kinds of other stupid things and disrespectful things. It's amazing that they're willing to support an obvious Nazi.
Right. Right. It's
Tim, you've reported on this. His team was at the Massachusetts Democrat Convention, of which locally, Shane Burgo, leader of the Shane Denistas in the city of New Bedford, is on the state committee. So is Maria Fiesta, having a party on the taxpayer's dime when she's awake. They're on the Democrat state committee. They all allowed this Plattner's campaign, the guy with the Nazi tattoo, asked for money and supporters at the convention.
Yeah, it was wild. You know, and it's crazy, too, because even take away all this controversy on its surface, why is there a Maine politician in a state Democrat convention that has nothing to do with his state?
Right.
No one's going to benefit from anything from a Graham Plattner thing here from Massachusetts. It's for the Massachusetts Democrats. But beyond that, you're right. You know, someone with his character and his background and his controversy, it's crazy. Mass Dems told me they didn't know. But come on, I don't buy that. I mean, you're charging table space, and he's chairing table space. You guys charge for every breath that anyone who's there breathes. You know, you're telling me you didn't know the Graham Plattner, you know, the biggest story in the country, his campaign, you didn't know he was there.
We have Tim Dunn from the Boston Herald. How do people follow you on social media?
On X, it's at Consider Me Dunn. On Facebook, it's Timmy Dunn. And on Truth Social, it's Tim Dunn _ Boss Herald.
We're always looking for money. You may have money right in your yard. Turn your junk car into cash today at Mid-City Scrap in Westport. We pay top dollar for complete vehicles. Mid-City Scrap in Westport, we will pay you top dollar for complete vehicles like this. Small car, $400 to $500. Mid to large car, $500 to $600. SUV, up to $700. Full-size trucks, up to $800 in cash. No games, no waiting, just fast cash. Well, Chris, how do I know if it's a small car, a mid-sized car, large-sized car, full-size? How do I know? Well, it's very easy. Call Joe, Johnny, Mark, or Doug at 508-675-7831. They'll do all the work. They'll tell you what you got, tell you how much they're going to give you. Call Joe, Johnny, Mark, or Doug at 508-675-7831. Mid-City Scrap, cash for junk cars, State Road in Westport. So, Tim, you've heard this. We didn't know before. When they were talking about Graham Plattner, the Dems telling you, we didn't know. Because you've been covering the Lamar Cook story.
Oh, yeah.
They claimed they didn't know he was importing, allegedly, pounds and pounds of cocaine to at least two state house buildings.
They remind me, if you've ever seen The Wolf of Wall Street, when they're getting depositioned, and they all just say, I don't recall. I don't recall. I don't. It reminds me of that scene with this office. You know, they have no idea how this this gun-toting, you know, maniac and gangbanger who has got a family of gangbangers, got into there. Then they don't know how he got $31,000 in a contract buyout he wasn't entitled to.
Right.
Then they don't know how his police record and everything got, somehow got overlooked by the governor and her team. Then they don't know how his mother won the lottery after he got released. It's amazing how much they just don't know.
They don't. They love not to know.
Yeah, they love it.
They love not to know. 508-996-0500. Where are we with the governor's primary on the Republican side now, Tim?
On the Republican side? Well, we got I don't know if it was the last time I was on with you we talked about. There was a Suffolk poll that didn't look too good for short sleeve.
Right.
I think he had like 13%. There's 40 undecided, and then there's West Minogue. I just did an article about the fundraising aspect of things. It looks like that you have to kind of – it depends how you look at it. It's not a traditional way. Usually when you look at fundraising for campaigns, you look at, A versus B, who has more money. But when you have a billionaire in the race, another very successful millionaire in his own right and short sleeve in the race – and then Governor Healey, which I guess to her credit, and it shows how much of a good politician she is in terms of the politician part and getting reelected, is she's outraised both of them in terms of outside contributions to her campaign in this past month. I think she had a few hundred thousand, I think it's 300,000 or so she raised. Minogue came in second and first on the Republican side, but second overall with I think a couple hundred thousand, and then a short sleeve raise around 60,000, I think.
Okay.
He raised. So it was a small little window to look at. But Healey really is really turning up the heat with outside contributions. She doesn't self-fund to her campaign, which, there is something to say to that, especially for her base who does, they love grassroots stuff.
Right.
But in terms of overall war chest, Minogue is far and away. He's got over $10 million still in his cash on hand.
Right.
Healy's got about six, and I think Shortsleeve has just under $1 million.
I'm hearing that Brian Shortsleeve will continue to supplement his campaign with additional tranches of money. And he's got a lot of supporters. Republican, deep-pocketed guys. And, of course, the super PACs. I don't know if you've written much about those yet, Tim, but the super PACs are having a big impact in this state election, as they have for a couple of different cycles, including, the Boston Mayor's race.
Yeah.
So these super PACs, which, by the way, folks, so that could take unlimited contributions from corporations, individuals, and unions, and trade associations. So they're really a game changer.
Oh, yeah. You see, actually, going back to the Plattner thing with Act Blue, that's what, they had... They sent, I think, $3.6 million in, just from Massachusetts, and those are all individual earmarked donations. And you got the $7,000 donors, like some MIT professors and some capital venturists, venture capitalist people who are in Massachusetts. But, yeah, they act as that vendor. And I think is it the Unity PAC that's with short sleeve, I think, and I'm noticing? Or
I don't know the different names of them, but that sounds about right. There's a couple out there. There's... I think, is it Make Massachusetts
First or something?
First.
Yeah, because you see them on social media a lot, too. They really have an online strong presence, too. But they definitely are making a big impact. You just look at the OCPF records of all the donations they get. So,
We're going to, let's go to the phones. We got people calling in. Let's see what they have to say. Good morning. You're on with Tim Dunn from the Boston Herald.
Oh, good morning. Good morning. I was just calling because I think we as a nation should be embarrassed by our lack of leadership at the highest degree. We have this guy who I think Republicans in general, I'm not a Democrat, I'm not a Republican, I'm independent, but to see a level of disrespect and blatant racism, you could say at this point.
Who are you talking about, sir? Who are you talking about?
Oh, I'm talking about Donald Trump.
Okay.
Donald Trump and the Republican Party.
Oh, I haven't heard
of
this one before, Chris.
No, I haven't heard of
that. Oh, yeah.
So how is he a racist?
Okay, so...
Now, here's the part where he's going to act surprised that you don't know why he's a racist.
Right? Right. Go ahead, Paul.
The surprising part is that you guys are acting like you don't know how
he's
a racist.
Oh, my God, that's awesome. So, hold on. Tim Dunn just predicted you would say that.
Right. It's funny.
Anyway,
tell us.
Here's the part we ask you first.
Oh, we're racist too.
Okay, so you don't even know who I am, but how am I racist, please?
Yeah, WBSM. It's a
What a clown.
Yeah,
what a clown. Hey, go out front with a sign now.
Yeah.
Because you know he doesn't have a job.
Oh, obviously this guy doesn't have a job. He calls radio stations and just tries to... You know, it's funny.
Calls us racist.
All these people, too, you know, they say you're racist. You ask for an example. They ask, what do you mean? You don't know? You don't know that you've been a Ku Klux Klan member your whole life? Like, come on.
It's, what a joke!
Yeah. I envy your job as a talk radio host. It's probably one of the fun jobs you can have. But that part I don't envy. These idiots.
Listen, I like the people out there that dumb. Oh, he might have been playing a character. You got to understand.
Yeah.
That might have been a rock ribbed Republican calling up to make fun of people like him.
Yeah, maybe.
Right? Could have been a character.
Yeah.
Could have been a character. Speaking of Nazis, Graham Platten, who's the Democrat nominee from the state of Maine, I was talking with Scott Lang over the weekend, right? And he's beside himself going, why are they doing this?
Right.
Scott Lang would never endorse a Plattner. Anybody with a Nazi tattoo, that's it. You can't participate in elected politics.
No, God, no. And it's just funny seeing all the twists and turns that people are going to make. You know, now all of a sudden Susan Collins is like this, like
the worst.
Yeah, it's Donald Trump Jr. You know, she's just all of a sudden like, you know, the most right wing, like, you know, neo-Nazi, you know, person ever. When she's voted, you know, I think probably more than half the time against Trump and
right.
has been against him. But, you know, and you see all the twists and turns. You know, well, he's, you know, he's got PTSD. Oh, okay, that makes, you know, sexting woman and cheating on your wife and everything okay.
Listen, I know. I never served in combat, but I know a lot of guys that went to combat. None of them have a Nazi tattoo.
My grandfather, who's late, you know, he died a few years ago. He fought against the Nazis.
Right.
You know, it's just crazy. We're a country that, you know, is where we are at because we defeated these Nazis. And then there's a guy parading the tattoo around. It's just
the governor of Massachusetts has endorsed them. So did Elizabeth Warren. Literally said, "Oh, that's my man.
That's my man." Going to have, you know, crack a beer with him too. And then Ed Markey, you know, it's funny because Ed Markey really played the politics game. He's playing the game Schumer's playing because Schumer's not going to be. I was noticing, I was listening to Fox News the other night, and sorry to that last caller. I know Fox News, but
I think he was playing a character.
He must have been, but you know, Markey's kind of doing the same thing that Schumer's doing. Schumer's afraid of getting primaried by AOC, so he doesn't want to. He has to kind of go out and support Plattner, but he doesn't want to go too far and upset people by supporting Plattner. Markey played that same game on CNN last week, dodging, you know, giving an official endorsement until he finally gave an official endorsement, I think, on Friday.
Do you think, Tim, because you're covering this sort of competitive race on the Democrat side for the U.S. Senate, do you think there's a possibility that Seth Moulton, who's a combat veteran in the Marines like Plattner, could have endorsed Markey to please the base here? Was that what Markey was worried about, do you think?
I'm not too sure. Markey's an endorsement machine. I mean, every other day you're getting an email. I'm pretty sure I got one this morning too, with some union. So I don't think Moulton's going to out endorse Markey. He did close the gap in a lot of recent polls. I mean, I think in November Markey had a 19 point lead over him. And he's closed that down to about 6. And these are all different polls and matching them up. And you know how polls can be. But, you know, that is a sizable gap to close. At the convention, Markey sizably won. I mean, it was pretty obvious, and they all wanted him. And I think, honestly, I think this might be Markey's primary. I think the thing that did Moulton in was saying that he didn't want his daughters playing with trans athletes. I think that's honestly going to be the only thing.
I think I saw a video. I know I saw it on Facebook. Might have been from the Boston Herald, but I'm not sure. Of trans people heckling Moulton in a parade.
Yeah, he was in a pride. Yeah, he was in one of their pride parades. And yeah, I mean, it's funny because otherwise, if he didn't have that, you can imagine. I would probably predict he'd be trouncing Markey. He's younger. He's the new face. You don't want a career politician. I'll make these decisions. You know, and they're pretty much ideologically locked. And that's the only negative real attack that people go against Moulton on. I mean, or you know, they don't care about Marcelo Gomes da Silva, the illegal immigrant, you know, child molester allegedly
that he brought to the State of the Union
address, yeah,
and then hit him in his office, right?
Right. Yeah, well, that's all kosher. That's all kosher for them. They love that. But in terms of saying that you don't want your daughter being run over by a 180-pound boy, you know, that's
Tim Dunn in a wig.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you don't want that at all. You know, especially me in a wig. But, you know, that's where it crosses the line, I guess. That's where the Democrats are today.
So. We're going to take a break. We'll be back more with Tim Dunn from the Boston Herald. We got a lot of big stories more to cover here with Tim Dunn. You know, in New England, where we live, framing has to stand up to the elements. That's exactly what Shoreline Framing Incorporated is built for. Dave Silvera and his team bring more than 20 years of residential and commercial wood framing experience to every single job. From custom homes to large commercial projects, Shoreline Framing delivers strong, precise craftsmanship designed for coastal New England conditions. Unique conditions require unique skills. Reliable crews, quality work in framing that is built to last. For advanced residential and commercial wood framing, trust Shoreline Framing Incorporated. Contact Dave Silvera and Shoreline Framing Incorporated in Dartmouth to discuss your next project. Here is the phone number. Write this down. 508-962-0977. Again, the phone number to contact Dave Silvera and Shoreline Framing Incorporated is 508-962-0977. We'll be right back.
To you by Dee's Hot Dogs in New Bedford, where you can get two hot dogs, chips, and a soda for just $6.
Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
Welcome back. I'm Chris McCarthy. We have Tim Dunn from the Boston Herald with us. So, Tim, you have a really funny story today. It's the kind of story that sends guys like shivers down my spine. An open mic story.
Yeah.
In the Boston, or you can check it out at bostonherald.com. Tim, explain what happened to these politicians, but it really could happen to anybody who's works in front of a microphone. I've had it happen to me. I've done it to other people by on accident and on purpose. You turn the mic on, they don't realize it.
Yeah.
And, you know, they keep talking. It happened to someone who was in here. He was running for office. It was me and Marcus were here at the time, and he was yelling and screaming and during a break. And I kept saying to him, hey, we're going back. We're coming back. We're coming back. I'm going to turn these microphones on. And he wouldn't calm down. So I just turned the microphones on.
It's like watching a car accident in slow motion, you know?
So we have the audio of it. He didn't come anywhere near winning that year. But anyway, so tell us, set it up for us, Tim Dunn, for people who will eventually read your story at bostonherald.com. What happened?
Yeah, so actually, it's funny because I told you yesterday I'd be publishing in the afternoon. I guess they changed it, published earlier today. So you can check it out online right now.
It's a good story.
Yeah, it is. It's good. State reps, Jack Lewis and John Moran, they're at a June 3rd Pride event. It was the whole Pride event with Governor Healey, Senator Julian Sear, and these two reps, a bunch of people from the LGBTQ plus caucus at the State House. And they were kicking off Pride Month at the State House staircase outside. And there's a podium that was going to be set up for Governor Healey, all the important speakers. And at one point in the video, the audio technician turns on the audio. And this is, again, why you really got to be careful. And it's, reps Lewis and Moran were talking just, amongst themselves behind the microphone, not knowing. They're Democrats. Yeah, they're all both Democrats for sure. And, they did not realize that their conversation was being picked up and recorded by this microphone, which would then be later posted to millions of people on YouTube. So, and what's funny about this also is that there's no, they're outside, they're at a state house public event, so there's no privacy protections at all either. So they're out. And when they started talking, there's another unnamed, unidentified person who came up to them, and they're just chatting and talking about how many staffers they have in each of their phone contacts. Which you can understand. There's a lot. There's a lot of different staffers moving from office to office. You hire new people. It's not a high paying job, so you get a lot of turnover. So they have a lot of contacts from former office, former staffers, current ones, and Rep. Lewis was talking about all the people who he has in his phone who he doesn't even put in their actual name anymore, and he. Was talking to this unidentified man about, I'm pulling up his quote now, "I don't even program their real names," Lewis explained to the man. "So look how many times the word guy is saved in my phone. Dog guy, lady guy, but this is where it gets worse. Gay guy, it's clear who they are." Chris, gay guy is one thing. I wonder who dog guy is. I don't know what that means. I've seen some weird things out on, you know, on the interwebs out
yes.
there with people wearing dog masks and stuff. So I don't know if that's what he means. And then lady guy, I'm sure that person probably isn't too happy whoever that is.
It is wild, right? How, look, the level of disrespect for the people that do all the work up there, the staff,
right,
is really pronounced. Caught on an open mic. They would deny any of this if you didn't catch them on an open mic, that they talk about their staff members and their fellow reps and senators, staff people this way. It's really outrageous.
You know, it's funny how people sound when they're candid, too, because you know what this guy did? The guy who was talking to him, he actually confirmed, oh, these are just denominators, exactly, right? And Lewis said, yep, exactly. Yo, I'm just labeling these people unfairly.
Right.
You know, as gay guy, lady guy, and dog guy. I think I would be the most embarrassed if I was dog guy.
Yes. And how do you earn that nickname?
I don't think that's FCC regulations, Chris, I don't think allow for that. So
Tim would love to explain it, but he can't.
I would love to in detail, but I would like to keep my job and my opportunity to come on the air here too.
Yes, we appreciate that.
Time was going on and they're about to get ready to go, and then Rep Moran noticed openly gay Rep Thomas Mokley, and Rep Moran's gay too. So yeah. And he said, Thomas, come over here. We need pretty boys like you over here. And you think, okay, whatever, you know, two gay men, you know, they can do that. You know, that's whatever, you know, right. That's fine. And then Rep. Lewis just digs his grave even more, saying, no, 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 not you. I always like when I stand next to the ugly people because it makes me look better. So now any picture or any event this guy has been at, people are going to be saying, oh, Jesus.
I'm the ugly guy.
Yeah, I was next to him. I'm the ugly guy.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, it's just funny what you can be like when you're off the record. Then it goes on. You know, then they Senate President Karen Spilkel comes over, and I guess luckily for her, she was faced away from the podium. You couldn't pick up anything she was saying.
But Does she normally stand next to the other rep who? Well, anyway, go ahead.
Well, yeah, she would be falling in line with Lewis's rule, I guess, yes. If she does. But she came over, and Reps Moran and Lewis were talking to her and just chatting, and you can hear Rep Moran say, Rep Gaskey. Rep Gaskey is a
Wareham.
Yeah, right in Wareham, Carver, all that. Yeah, that district. He's a Republican.
Yes.
And, you know, you hear some mumbling. You couldn't really make out some of the conversation. It was inaudible. And then what you hear is, again, our favorite Rep Lewis come out and say, let me just try to find it really quick. Oh, just went away. But I remember what he said. He said, the only part it picked up was, well, the good thing about Rep Gaskey is he's not the smartest person in the world. So just disparaging a fellow lawmaker.
Right.
And come to find out what this all the scuttlebutt about with Gaskey is that he apparently on June 1st put a Facebook post out on his official Facebook page questioning why Pride Month exists. He's not the only one, you know. No. And then he said, why don't we call it American Pride Month? So that got the ire of the Democrats in Massachusetts, the LGBTQ caucus, and that got Rep. Moran so upset he put a reel out calling out a dangerous MAGA Republican, and that's why they're, you know, mean girls gossiping behind his back on June 3rd at that podium.
We have Tim Dunn from the Boston Herald here in studio. Tim, of course, we've been watching here at WBSM and reporting on the run for lieutenant governor because it has Sean Oliver, New Bedford City Councilor, in the race. It's advanced to the stage where Sean Oliver got enough votes at the convention to get on the ballot, got enough signatures to get on the ballot. But he is fighting one of his fellow Republicans because there's allegations of fraud that got her enough signatures to get on the ballot. Ann Manning Martin, what's going on with that?
Yeah, so actually, I've been in touch. I've reached out to Ann Manning Martin. She actually got back to me. I just left me a voicemail. I told her I'd get back to her once I'm done here. But it looks like that Mass Dems on their own have filed paperwork at the Secretary of State's office to get her and Michael Walsh disqualified. And from what I've heard is the short sleeve campaign through Sean Oliver has done the same thing on their end, not working together. We at first heard it was possibly together, but we've since confirmed with your help too, I think, helping me, search for these things,
right,
that they were separate. But,
separate, yeah. Right. The Democrats are doing their thing. Sean Oliver and Brian Schultzleaf are separate doing their thing.
Exactly.
With the same goal, kick her off the ballot.
So with Mass Dems, it's not going to hurt them. That's what their party would want. That's what their supporters would want. Now, the questions that come to my mind, just as an observer with Oliver, is I guess, and again, he's got a team, he's looking at this, so yes. You know, they're probably, you know, they're the smarter people than I am, but I guess what I would look at is the perception of it. Is that going to get any voters upset saying, oh, what's this guy, you know, Republican on Republican crime here? What's mm-hmm. going on? And then I think the other way I look at it too, though, is, well, this is the game. You know, right. it is a competition. You know, there's managers come out and argue in baseball. If someone balks, a pitcher balks, they're going to argue for it. There's right. a strike that should be called, or you know, that's why there's a challenge flag in football. You know, so you can challenge the rules, and you could say, you know, this is just disqualifies you. But I think that's kind of that's at least from my perspective, that's what I'd be looking at.
Yeah, I would say that there is a potential for supporters of Ann Manning Martin to say that's unfair, or Sean Oliver and Brian Shortsleeve. However, the example of Ann Brensley, who won the convention and used the same signature gatherer, at least one of them, as Ann Manning Martin and Michael Walsh, candidate for attorney general. She has talked all about fraud and how she was a victim of all of this. And so I think Sean Oliver and Brian Shortsleeve would be negligent to ignore that
right.
and let this person potentially advance to represent the party in November, where they would instantly be blown out of the water.
Well, yeah, and you could make the argument too. Again, and we did this with Ann Brensley. Yeah. You know, if you're stupid enough to hire somebody for $5 a signature, which, you know, what we've heard from different campaign managers who've done this, you know, or experience, that's really a kind of a red flag rate.
Yep.
You know, and you know, if you're that stupid to do that, and then not even oversee and make sure that this person you haven't vetted apparently is getting actual signatures, that's on you. And should you be a lieutenant governor candidate at that point, if right. that's the case? So.
Right. No, it's wild. Because at this moment in time, the only candidate certified on the Republican side for lieutenant governor is New Bedford's own Sean Oliver.
Yeah, and that, it's incredible. You know what a good mark on his resume too. Because you know, say if Healey and Driscoll are reelected, it didn't work out. I mean, first time, first try, only candidate survived. You know, two other candidates and made it the first try. Well, what I did hear was interesting, though. I think it was on Barry's show on Friday. Is that Sean intends to keep his city council post while running for, well, if he wins lieutenant governor too, which I found interesting, and I don't know if that conflicts or not, but.
So it would look on the surface anyway, to me, as a potential conflict. I also wonder, look, Sean has incredible energy. The guy has got incredible determination. When he sets his mind to a goal, he's going to achieve it. But I wonder if he'd have enough time,
well, yeah,
to be honest.
Statewide office is a lot. It's a lot.
And look, the lieutenant governor has significant powers, and I'm not sure if you can share them while you're being, you know, be the lieutenant governor while you're being a city councilor. And also, I do know this, that it was an impromptu question by Barry.
Okay.
Barry just was like I do, asking things off the top of his head. And Sean was answering, I would think, off the top of his head. Like, yeah, I love being city councilor, and I'd like to continue to be both.
Well, it's good you explain, because that's what you mention all the time, too. Sometimes people half hear things on the radio, so
right.
That's good you explain. Because, you know, the way I heard it was, oh, he came out and announced it, you know? So that's,
yeah.
That's good to hear that.
And look, I remember when George Rogers was the rep, and he kept the council seat. But being a rep...
It's different. You're isolated.
Totally
different. Yeah, you're still focused on your own area.
Right,
you know?
Right. When you're the lieutenant governor, what I would imagine is that all the other municipalities outside of the region, because I think the region would see it as a bonus, maybe they'll put up some resistance. And again, it's an interesting story. As we get down to the fact that Sean Oliver, the only guy from New Bedford to have the stones to run statewide in decades, is in a brand new area.
Right, and the first in New Bedford, and I think the South Coast really did
right.
to go this far. That's
right.
Awesome.
It's really going to be great. This hour is brought to you by the cold beer and the world's best chicken wings at Rose Alley Ale House. Beautiful day to sit on the deck at Rose Alley. Tim, the Deaton, John Deaton is the Republican nominee for U.S. Senate. His poll numbers were horrible. In that same poll that they polled mostly South Coast Cape Cod voters who were going to vote in the Republican primary, his numbers were absolutely horrible. His name ID numbers were like non-existent.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, I kind of noticed those low poll numbers. I didn't get a chance to look much into that. I don't know if they had an explainer on that or if they asked people why, you know, they weren't either recognizing him or they weren't supporting him. I mean, I know I haven't heard too many ads of his, you know.
That's why.
Yeah. I mean, as you eloquently put a lot, you know, if someone doesn't know your name and you're running for office, that's on you.
Yeah.
Exactly. I shouldn't have to search for your name, you know.
No.
But, he's got a big online presence. But that's not enough. You know, not everybody's on X or on Facebook like I am or you are, because we're searching for stories like Mad Men, you know. So it's a, you got to get out on the radio, you got to get out on the TV. That's something that Mike Minogue certainly has been, you know, getting an A+ on since
he
launched. Yeah.
Yes. What about this ongoing, now it's involving Howie Carr. Howie Carr has offered Mike Minogue and Brian Shortsleeve airtime, studio time to come in and do a debate. Boston Herald is obviously covering that. What's going on with this back and forth or lack of back and forth on a debate between the two leading Republicans?
I think you're going to see more of the same going on. You know, I think that what it has been and what it will be and what it continues to be is Shortsleeve is a kind of fighting tooth and nail to stay in this race and stay. And you know, and one of his biggest things is Minogue won't debate me. I think Minogue's going to continue to not debate him. He's going to keep snubbing that because he just actually put a press release out, I think on Friday or Saturday, challenging Healy a second time now. So he's now challenged Healy twice without doing a primary debate. And people, you know, and I've heard so many different opinions across, and I go back and forth myself too on who's right, who's wrong, who should do what.
Right.
If I'm looking at it from a strategy standpoint, I would really urge Mike Minogue to just debate him. Because if you already, you know, had a slam dunk at the convention and won by a landslide, if you are doing that well still in polling, you know, this is the last thing. It's really the kind of final nail in the coffin, really. You just got to say, well, I've debated him now.
Right.
Put it to bed. I won the convention. I did well in recent polling. I debated him. I'm moving on to Maura Healey. But now you're giving him kind of free ammo to just go attack you.
Yes.
So I don't think it's the smartest move. I mean, again, he's hiring people who do this. They were way smarter than me. I'm just the reporter. But at least from my own, you know, amateur perspective here, that's what I would think.
Do you think, because I do, that Mike Minogue and his team have blundered into this and it's giving Brian Shortsleeve a why to stay in the race and giving him talking material that, because the average person, Republican, Democrat, who follows politics is saying, yeah, what's the problem? Why wouldn't you debate?
Right, exactly. And, you know, and I think maybe he's falling symptom to this, where you see this in politics all the time. And I you know, at least from what I've heard back in the old days, that you didn't used to get this all the time, is nobody can ever admit they're wrong. No one can ever say, hey, you know what? No, I kind of want to walk that back. I think I was wrong at that point.
Right.
And it wouldn't even hurt his campaign to say, you know what? I should debate him. I changed my mind. You know, I really think that's probably what it is. Now, I think what him and his team are afraid of is saying, oh, well, you know, getting all the blowback from not, you know, from debating him now. And now, you know, what are you were afraid, now you're not afraid, what's going on? But and also it gives more ammo to say, well, is he as smart as we all really think? I think that he probably is.
Yeah.
But if you're not going to debate and you're going to hide from an intellectual conversation, which is what a debate is,
right,
you're only giving off the impression to some people that you're not as smart as you say you are.
I wonder too if Mike Minogue's position, drawn out by Sean Oliver dramatically on a couple of occasions, was that he wasn't going to debate until after the convention. Now, in the days before the convention, I was talking to a lot of people and being asked, quite frankly, by a lot of people what I thought they ought to do at the convention. And what I was hearing from reliable sources is that Keneally was not going to have the minimum 15%, and he didn't.
No.
But I also heard a lot of people felt that the same thing would happen to Brian Shortsleeve, that both Brian Shortsleeve and Mike Keneally would not make the 15%. that Mike Minogue would be such a force that neither one of them would even qualify for the ballot. And obviously that did not happen. It happened in one occasion, did not happen with the occasion of Brian Shortsley. So I'm wondering if the Minogue team, based on what I was hearing, because I was surprised that Brian Shortsleeve made the ballot, based not on his abilities, but just on what I was hearing was going on. I'm wondering if they didn't ever figure that Brian Shortsleeve, like Keneally, wouldn't even make the ballot.
That is possible because, you know, again, Shortsleeve and Oliver both, they barely got on by the skin of their teeth. Now, a win is a win is a win, but they still, the numbers align, and they were by less than half a percentage point, I think, or half a full percent from getting on. So I could see that because, you know, Minogue, we did talk about before the convention was, but Minogue was probably pounding the hardest with delegates and going around to different state committees and, you know, I'm sorry, town committees and city committees all over the place. And he really, really hit the campaign trail hard then. So I think they probably were calculating he's going to earn all that. You know, they probably had some sort of calculus going on thinking that he was going to have a landslide victory there.
Right. And he did.
He did. He absolutely did. And that's the other part, too. I think you get this is where you get the faction now. This is where I think the Republican Party in Massachusetts is going to do what it always does, is split its ticket. You know, and it's going to be doing it inadvertently, too, because I think everybody wants a solid ticket right now. But I think you have the party saying, just drop out, Shortsleeve. Please just drop out. We want to have, you know, we need more time. But also, I think you have a sizable enough coalition behind Shortsleeve that it's not going to just happen that easily.
Tim Dunn is my guest here in the studio. Tim, Ann Brensley, who apparently, unbeknownst to her, was involved in fraud to try to get on the ballot with her signatures. It's spilled over now to other races as well. But she now, I saw her on Facebook, has announced she's going to be a write-in candidate for lieutenant governor.
I don't know how that's going to work. I mean, has anybody?
I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's just that leads to what? More splitting of tickets?
Yes.
Yeah, it's not going to help anybody. And has anybody ever been elected statewide on a write-in candidate? I don't think so. I mean, maybe what, back in the 1930s or something when, you know, Thomas McGee, who everybody knew.
I'm going to say, this is weird that I know this, Joe Moakley was elected to Congress, much smaller than statewide, but Congress as a write-in candidate. Maybe it was an independent. It wasn't a write-in. It was independent. No, look, you can pull an independent in a primary, in a rep race, 150 signatures. Remember, to be a write-in candidate for a statewide office, you have to get the same amount of votes as write-ins that you needed as signatures. So 10,000 people have to not only write her name in, but also then actually complete the process by voting for her. It's a two-step or three-step process. You use a sticker and then fill in the oval, or write her name in and fill the oval in.
Good luck, especially with this ballot too. It's going to be like a 15-page ballot. People aren't going to want to take the extra time to
Well, it'll be in the primary.
Oh, you're right.
The primary. But I think Ann Brensley is doing something that really casts herself in a bad light, not as an indefatigable champion for the people, but as a very selfish person.
Self-serving, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Very selfish person.
I'm not, you know, it's like, look, I think she'd be well advised to be told, look, you got screwed, it happens, but better luck next year.
Right.
What are you doing now? You're going to hurt your fellow Republicans at this point.
And I will tell you this, and I'm going to imagine we're not the only ones. Due to the fact that we do a lot of local races where sometimes, I'll give you an example, city council races or mayor's race, the ballot access time, the signature period closes, and somebody decides, well, I want to run for mayor or I want to run for the city council. We have a rule here. We don't put writing candidates on the air. We don't give them free time like they qualified for the ballot. We don't do it. And I'm going to tell you something. As far as I'm, unless I'm told otherwise, I'm not going to put Ann Brensley on the air.
No.
She's not qualified for the ballot. And so the fact that she goes, well, I'm a write-in now. You know how many other people could say that?
I could say that.
Right. I'd put you on the air anytime, Tim. Yeah. Don't worry about that. You don't even have to say
you're right. Already, man.
Yeah. But like, anybody could say, I'm now a write-in for governor.
Right.
Right?
It's not dipping your toe in. You got to either be all in and qualified or not.
Right.
That's what it is.
And if you can't go out and get the signatures for a position on the ballot. And I know she tried, and for whatever reason, mostly her fault, let's be honest, you can't blame other people.
No.
And if she was totally a victim of this alleged fraud, that is not something you use to further gum up the works of your own political party.
No, you know, and she's a CEO. She's a company leader. She knows.
That's what she says.
On paper, she's a CEO.
Yes.
And she, you'd think that you'd have that wherewithal, that knowledge of, okay, well, you know what? A loss is a loss. I screwed up. I have to move on and learn from this.
Right.
Not just, it kind of just screams pouting and, you know, holding on to the ball so no one else can get it.
Remember, she was part of the wing of the impeachment Trump party. Okay. She's against Donald Trump. She literally donated to Hillary Clinton, literally donated to the Lincoln Project to undermine the president's authority when he was the president. The Russian spy stuff, all that's foolishness. So, really, is she a Republican? We'll take a break, then we'll be right back.
South Coast Now with Chris McCarthy. Weekdays on 1420 AM and 99.5 FM. WBSM.
Welcome back. Happy, what is it, Monday? Monday morning. Beautiful day out there. Well, it's almost Monday afternoon. Tim, you, of course, are always working on stories. How do people follow you on social media?
Sure, yeah. On X, it's or Twitter, it's at Consider Me Dunn. On Facebook, it's Timmy Dunn. And then on Truth Social, it's Tim Dunn _ Boss Herald. And you can get all my stories at bostonherald.com as well.
It is real early still in the political cycle.
Yeah, pretty early still. I mean, you got a couple months to leave when the primary comes up. And again, the smaller the race gets, the less action you see. You see more action later on, I guess I'd say. One thing that is coming up, though, that you can tell the heat is starting to get turned up, though, is tomorrow's debate between Deaton and Moulton. Deaton's probably first time having his face on a television, screen, with, speaking of the ads and everything. But first inter-party primary debate, that'll be on WBZ tomorrow with John Keller. That should be pretty interesting.
That should be very interesting. Hopefully, it'll raise up, although, look, as much as people in politics like you and I talk about debates, most people, real Americans, average people, do not pay any attention to them.
No.
But hopefully that'll change this year and it'll raise John Deaton's profile a little higher because it's nowhere near where it needs to be.
Well, you can say primary debates because, for example, I think, when Markey ran against, or Kennedy ran against Markey, Joe Kennedy III, that primary debate where Markey, I think, slapped him around like a little boy and, said, why don't you ask your father, that one, I think, actually did change a lot. Kennedy's numbers went down and Markey ended up winning the primary there. So it could be interesting. But then, as you're totally right, with general, people have their minds made up. They're not going to listen to it. But it could be interesting to see, now that it's a primary debate technically, but it's between the two potential general election opponents, I wonder how that will mesh together, if it will, change anybody's opinion somehow.
Look, it's very smart of Moulton to hook up with a Republican to treat it like I've already won the primary.
Yeah.
Right? Very smart. Anyway, Tim, I really appreciate it. You coming by.
Thanks for having me on, Chris.
Guys, stick around for Barry. I've seen him here in the halls a couple of times this morning. And then, of course, the great Howie Carr. After that, he'll be here on WBSM. I'll be back tomorrow. God willing, I'll be back tomorrow. So enjoy the day. Get out there. Enjoy the sunshine. Maybe make a couple mistakes. I don't know. It's a Monday, but maybe treat it like a Saturday afternoon. Treat it like a Saturday night or a Friday night. I don't know. Have some fun, though. God willing, I'll be back tomorrow morning. Bright and early. 9 a.m.